The monster sighs and shakes his head and nods towards the entrance of the house.
Late now. Sleep, he growls.
Not until you tell me about the letter.
The monster looks like a very tired person being kept awake by someone thumping him at regular intervals as hard as he can, with a pillowcase filled with yogurt. Or, more or less, anyway. He looks up and frowns and evaluates Elsa as if trying to work out how far he could fling her.
Wrote, protect castle, he repeats.
Elsa steps closer to show that she's not afraid of him, or to show herself.
And what else?
He hunches up inside his hood and starts walking off through the snow.
Protect you. Protect Elsa.
Then he disappears in the darkness and is gone.
He disappears a lot,
Elsa will learn in due course. He's surprisingly good at it for someone so large. Elsa hears muted panting from the other side of the yard and turns round. George comes jogging towards the house. She knows it's George because he's wearing shorts over his joggers and the greenest jacket in the world. He doesn't see her, and the worse, because he's too busy bouncing up and down from a bench. George trains a lot at running and jumping up and down from things. Elsa sometimes thinks he's in a permanent audition to be in the next Super Mario game.
Come,
whispers Elsa quickly to the worst to get it inside before George catches sight of it. And to her surprise, the mighty animal obeys her. The worse brushes past her legs, so its coat tickles her all the way up to her forehead. And she's almost knocked down by the force of it. She laughs. It looks at her and seems to be laughing as well. Apart from Granny, the worse is the first friend Elsa has ever had. She makes sure Britt-Marie is not prowling about on the stairs and that George still hasn't seen them, and then she leads the worse down into the cellar. The storage units are each assigned to a flat, and Granny's unit is unlocked and empty.
You have to stay here tonight, she whispers. Tomorrow we'll find you a better hiding place.
The worse doesn't look hugely impressed, but it lies down and rolls onto its side and peers nonchalantly into the parts of the cellar that still lie steeped in darkness. Elsa checks where it's looking, then focuses on the worse.
Granny always said there were ghosts down here, she says firmly. You mustn't scare them. Do you hear?
The worse lies unconcerned on its side on the floor, its mattock-sized incisors glinting through the darkness.
I'll bring more chocolate tomorrow, if you're nice, she promises.
The worse looks as if it's taking this concession into consideration. Elsa leans forward and kisses it on the nose. Then she darts up the stairs and closes the cellar door carefully behind her. She sneaks up without turning on the lights to minimize the risk of anyone seeing her. But when she comes to Britt-Marie in Kent's flat, she crouches and goes up the last flight in big leaps. She's almost sure that Britt-Marie is standing inside, peering out of the spy hole. The next morning, both the monster's flat and the cellar storage unit are dark and empty. George drives Elsa to school. Mama's already gone to the hospital because, as usual, there's some emergency going on there, and it's Mum's job to sort out emergencies. George talks about his protein bars the whole way. He bought a whole box of them, he says, and now he can't find them anywhere. George likes talking about protein bars and various functional items, functional clothes and functional jogging shoes, for example. George loves functions. Elsa hopes no one ever invents protein bars with functions because then George's head will probably explode. Not that Elsa would find that such a bad thing, but she imagines Mum would be upset about it, and there'd be an awful lot of cleaning. George drops her off in the parking area after asking her one more time if she's seen his missing protein bars. She groans with boredom and jumps out. The other children keep their distance, watching her guardedly. Rumours of the monster's intervention outside the park have spread, but Elsa knows it will only last a short while. It happened too far from school. Things that happen outside school may as well be happening in outer space, because she is protected in here anyway. She may have a respite of a couple of hours, but those who are chasing her will keep testing the boundaries, and once they drum up the courage to have another pop at her, they'll hit her harder than ever. And she knows that the monster will never get anywhere near the fence for her sake, because schools are full of children, and children are full of bacteria. and there's not enough Alka-Gel in the whole world for the monster after that. But she enjoys her freedom that morning in spite of all. It's the second to last day before the Christmas holidays, and after tomorrow she can have a couple of weeks of rest from running. A couple of weeks without notes in her locker about how ugly she is and how they're going to kill her. In the first break, she allows herself a walk along the fence. She tightens her backpack straps from time to time to make sure it isn't hanging too loose. She knows they won't be chasing her now, but it's a difficult habit to break. You run slower if your backpack's loose. Eventually, she lets herself drift off in her own thoughts. That is probably why she doesn't see it. She's thinking about Granny and Miamis. She wonders what plan Granny had in mind when she sent her out on this treasure hunt. That is, if she had any plan at all. Granny always sort of made her plans as she went along, and now she's no longer there. Elsa is having problems recognizing what the next step of the treasure hunt is supposed to be. Above all, she wonders what Granny meant when she said she was worried that Elsa would hate her when she found out more about her. Up until now, Elsa has only found out that Granny had some pretty dodgy friends, which was hardly a shock, you might say. And Elsa obviously understands that Granny's statement about who you were before you became a granny must have something to do with Elsa's mum, but she'd rather not ask mum unless she has to. Everything Elsa says to mum these days seems to end in an argument, and Elsa hates it. She hates that one can't be allowed to know things unless one starts arguing. And she hates being as alone as one can only be without Granny. So it must be for that reason that she doesn't notice it. Because she's probably no more than 2 or 3 meters away when she finally sees it, which is an insane distance not to see a worse from. It's sitting by the gate, just outside the fence. She laughs, surprised. The worse seems to be laughing as well, but internally.
I look for you this morning, she says, and goes into the street, even though this is not allowed during breaks.
Were you nice to the ghosts? Asks Elsa. The worse doesn't look as if it was, but she throws her arms round its neck all the same, buries her hands deep in its thick black fur, and exclaims,
Wait, I've got something for you.
The worse greedily sticks its nose into her backpack, but looks remarkably disappointed when it pulls it back out again.
They're protein bars, says Elsa, apologetically. We don't have any sweets at home because Mum doesn't want me to eat them, but George says these are mega tasty.
The worse doesn't like them at all. It only has about 9 of them. When the bell goes, Elsa hugs it hard, hard, hard one more time and whispers,
Thanks for coming.
She knows that the other children in the playground see her do it. The teachers may be able to avoid noticing the biggest, blackest, worse appearing out of nowhere in the morning break, but no child in the entire universe could. No one leaves any notes in Elsa's locker that day. Chapter 12. Mint. Elsa stands alone on the balcony of Granny's flat. They used to stand here often. It was here that Granny first pointed at the cloud animals and talked about the land of almost awake, just after Mum and Dad got divorced. That night, Elsa got to see Miamis for the first time. She stares out blindly into the darkness and misses her more than ever. She's been lying on Granny's bed, looking up at the photos on the ceiling and trying to figure out what Granny was talking about at the hospital when she said, Elsa mustn't hate her. And also, It's a grandmother's privilege never to have to show her grandchild who she was before she became a grandmother. Elsa has spent hours trying to work out what this treasure hunt is for, or where the next clue can be found, if there even is one. The worse sleeps in the storage unit in the cellar. In the midst of all this, it's good to know that the worse is close at hand. It makes Elsa feel a little bit less lonely. She peers over the balcony railing. Has a sense of something moving down there on the ground in the darkness. She can't see anything, obviously, but she knows the monster is there. Granny has planned the fairy tale in this way. The monster is guarding the castle, guarding Elsa. She's just angry with Granny for never explaining what he's guarding it from.
A voice further off soars through the silence.
Yeah, I've got all the booze for the party. I'm only just getting back home now,
the voice declares irritably as it draws closer. It's the woman in the black skirt, talking into the white lead. She's heaving four heavy plastic bags along, and they knock into each other and then against her shins at every step. The woman swears and fumbles with her keys by the door.
Oh, there'll be at least 20 of us, and you know how well the guys in the office hold their drink. Not that they had any time to help, mind you, isn't it? I know, as if I didn't have a full-time job as well.
Is the last thing Elsa hears before the woman marches into the house. Elsa doesn't know much at all about the woman in the black skirt, except that everything smells of mint, and she always has very well-ironed clothes, and always seems to be stressed out. Granny used to say it was because of her boys. Elsa doesn't know what that's supposed to mean. Inside, Mum is sitting on a high stool in the kitchen, talking on the telephone and fiddling restlessly with one of Granny's tea towels. She never seems to have to listen very much to what the person at the other end of the line is saying. No one ever disagrees with Mum. Not that she raises her voice or interrupts. She's just not the sort of person anyone wants to get on the wrong side of. Mum likes to keep it like this because conflict is bad for efficiency, and efficiency is very important to her. George sometimes jokes that Mum will give birth to Halfie in her lunch break to avoid any negative effect on the hospital's general efficiency. Elsa hates George for making all those stupid jokes. Hates him because he thinks he knows Mum well enough to make jokes about her. Of course, Granny thought efficiency was rubbish, and she couldn't give a crap about the negative effect of conflict. Elsa heard one of the doctors at Mum's hospital saying that Granny could start a fight in an empty room. But when Elsa told Granny, she just looked miffed and said, "What if it was the room that started it?" And then she told the fairy tale about the girl who said no, even though Elsa had already heard it at least an eternity of times. The girl who said no was one of the first stories Elsa ever heard from the land of Almost Awake. It was about the Queen of Miodacus, one of the six kingdoms. In the beginning, the queen had been a courageous and fair-minded princess, very much liked by all. But unfortunately, she grew up and became a frightened adult, as adults tend to be. She started loving efficiency and avoiding conflict, as adults do. And then, the queen simply forbade all conflict in Miodacus. Everyone had to get along the whole time. And because nearly all conflicts start with someone saying no, the queen also made this word illegal. Anyone breaking this law was immediately cast into a huge naysayers' prison, and hundreds of soldiers in black armour, who were known as yaysayers, patrolled the streets to make sure there were no disagreements anywhere. Dissatisfied with this, the Queen had soon outlawed not only the word no, but also other words, including not, and maybe, and perhaps. Any of these were enough to get you sent straight to prison, where you'd never again see the light of day. After a couple of years, words like possibly and if and wait and see had also been made illegal. In the end, no one dared say anything at all. And then the Queen felt that she might as well make all talking illegal because almost every conflict tended to start with someone saying something. And after that, there was silence in the kingdom for several years. Until one day a little girl came riding in, singing as she went, and everyone stared at her because singing was an extremely serious crime in Miodacus, because there was a risk of one person liking the song and another disliking it. The yaysayers sprang into action to stop the girl, but they couldn't catch her because she was very good at running. So the yaysayers rang all the bells and called for reinforcements, upon which the Queen's very own elite force, known as the Paragraph Riders, because they rode a very special kind of animal that was a cross between a giraffe and a rule book, came out to stop the girl. But not even the Paragraph Riders could lay their hands on her. And in the end, the Queen in person came rushing out of her castle and roared at the girl to stop singing. But then the girl turned to the Queen, stared her right in the eye and said, "No." And as soon as she had said it, a piece of masonry fell off the wall round the prison. And when the girl said, "No," one more time, another piece of masonry fell.
And before long, not only the girl, but all the other people in the kingdom, even the yay-sayers and the paragraph riders, were shouting, "No, no, no!" And then the prison crumbled. And that was how the people of Meodacus learned that a queen only stays in power for as long as her subjects are afraid of conflict. Or at least Elsa thinks that was the moral of the story. She knows this partly because she checked out moral on Wikipedia, and partly because the very first word Elsa learned to say was no, which led to a lot of arguing between Mum and Granny. They fought about a lot of other things as well, of course. Once Granny said to Elsa's Mum that she only became a manager as a way of expressing teenage rebellion, because the very worst rebellion Elsa's Mum could dream up was to become an economist. Elsa never really understood what was meant by that. But later that night, when they thought Elsa was sleeping, Elsa heard Mum rebuff Granny by saying, "What do you know about my teenage years? You were never here." That was the only time Elsa ever heard Mum saying anything to Granny while holding back the tears. And then Granny went very quiet and never repeated the comment about teenage rebellion to Elsa. Mum finishes her call and stands in the middle of the kitchen floor with the tea towel in her hand, looking as if she's forgotten something. She looks at Elsa. Elsa looks back dubiously. Mum smiles sadly. "Do you want to help me pack some of your granny's things into boxes?" Elsa nods, even though she doesn't want to. Mum insists on packing boxes every night, despite being told by both the doctor and George that she should be taking it easy. Mum isn't very good at either, taking it easy or being told. "Your dad is coming to pick you up from school tomorrow afternoon," says Mum in passing as she ticks things off on her Excel packing spreadsheet.
"Because you're working late?"
asks Elsa, as if she means nothing in particular by the question.
"I'll be, staying on for a while at the hospital," says Mum, because she doesn't like lying to Elsa.
"Can't George pick me up then?"
"George is coming with me to the hospital."
Elsa packs things haphazardly into the box, deliberately ignoring the spreadsheet.
"Is Harfy sick?"
Mum tries to smile again. It doesn't go so very well.
"Don't worry, darling."
"That's the quickest way for me to know that I should be mega worrying," answers Elsa.
"It's complicated," Mum sighs.
"Everything is complicated if no one explains it to you."
"It's just a routine checkup."
"No, it isn't. No one has so many routine checkups in a pregnancy. I'm not that stupid."
Mum massages her temples and looks away. "Please, Elsa, don't you start making trouble about this as well."
"What do you mean, as well? What else have I been making trouble with you about?"
Elsa hisses, as one does when one is almost 8 and feels slightly put upon.
"Don't shout," says Mum, in a composed voice.
"I'm not shouting,"
shouts Elsa. And then they both look down at the floor for a long time, looking for their own ways of saying sorry. Neither of them knows where to begin. Elsa thumps down the lid of the removal crate, stomps off into Granny's bedroom, and slams the door. You could hear a pin drop in the flat for about 30 minutes after that, because that is how angry Elsa is. So angry that she has to start measuring time in minutes rather than eternities. She lies on Granny's bed and stares at the black and white photos on the ceiling. The werewolf boy seems to be waving at her and laughing. Deep inside, she wonders how anyone who laughs like that can grow up into something as incredibly doleful as the monster. She hears the doorbell go, and then a second ring following incredibly fast, much faster than would be feasible for a normal person when ringing a doorbell. So it can only be Britt Marie.
"I'm coming,"
Mum answers politely. Elsa can tell by her voice that she's been crying. The words come flowing out of Britt Marie as if she's fitted with a wind-up mechanism and someone has cranked it up using a key on her back.
"I rang your door. No one opened,"
Mum sighs. "No, we're not home. We're here."
"Your mother's car is parked in the garage and that hound is still loose on the property?"
She's talking so quickly it's clear she can't prioritise her various upsets. Elsa sits up in Granny's bed
but it takes almost a minute before she manages to take in what Britt Marie just said. Then she bounces out of bed and has to muster all her self-control to stop herself dashing off down the hall because she doesn't want to make the old busybody suspicious. Britt Marie stands on the landing with one hand very firmly inserted into the other, smiling at Mum in a well-meaning way, nattering on about how in this leaseholders' association they can't have rabid dogs running around. A sanitary nuisance is what it is. The dog is probably far away by now, Britt Marie. I wouldn't worry about it. Britt Marie turns to Mum and smiles well-meaningly.
No, no, of course you wouldn't, Ulrika, of course you wouldn't. You're not the type to worry yourself about other people's safety, even your own child's, are you? It's something you've inherited, I see, putting the career before the children. That is how it's always been in your family.
Mum's face is utterly relaxed. Her arms hang down, apparently relaxed. The only thing that gives her away is that she's slowly, slowly clenching her fists. Elsa has never seen her do that before. Britt Marie also notices. Again, she switches the position of her hands on her stomach. Looks as if she's sweating. Her smile stiffens.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, Ulrika, obviously. Obviously not. You make your own choices and prioritizations, obviously.
Was there anything else on your mind? Says Mum slowly. But something in her eyes has changed hue, which makes Britt Marie take a small, small step back.
No, no, nothing else, nothing else at all.
Elsa sticks out her head before she has time to turn round and leave.
What was that you said about Granny's car? It's in the garage, she says curtly, avoiding Mum's eye. It's parked in my space, and if it isn't moved at once, I'll call the police. How did it get there? How am I supposed to know?
Then she turns to Elsa's mum again with renewed courage.
The car has to be moved at once, otherwise I'm calling the police, Ulrika.
I don't know where the car keys are, Britt Marie, and if you don't mind, I need to sit down. I seem to be getting a headache.
Maybe if you didn't drink so much coffee, you wouldn't get headaches so often, Ulrika.
She turns round and stomps down the stairs so quickly no one has time to answer her. Mum closes the door in a slightly less self-controlled and composed way than usual and heads into the kitchen.
What did she mean by that? Asks Elsa.
She doesn't think I should drink coffee when I'm pregnant, Mum replies. Her phone starts ringing.
That's not what I meant, says Elsa.
She hates it when Mum pretends to be stupid. Mum picks up her telephone from the kitchen counter. I have to answer this, sweetheart.
What did Britt Marie mean when she said, in our family we put the career before the children? She meant Granny, didn't she?
The telephone continues ringing. It's from the hospital. I have to answer.
No, you don't.
They stand in silence looking at each other while the telephone rings two more times. Now it's Elsa's turn to clench her fists. Mum's fingers steal across the display. I have to take this, Elsa.
No, you don't.
Mum closes her eyes and answers the telephone. By the time she starts talking into it, Elsa has already slammed the door to Granny's bedroom behind her. When Mum gently opens the door half an hour later, Elsa pretends to be asleep. Mum sneaks up and tucks her in, kisses her cheek, turns off the lamp. By the time Elsa gets up an hour after that, Mum is sleeping on the sofa in the living room. Elsa sneaks up and tucks her and Halfie in, kisses Mum on the cheek, turns out the lamp. Mum is still holding Granny's tea towel in her hand. Elsa fetches a torch from one of the boxes in the hall and puts on her shoes, because now she knows where to find the next clue in Granny's treasure hunt. Chapter 13. Wine. It's a bit tricky to explain, but some things in Granny's fairy tales are like that. You have to understand, first of all, that no creature in the land of Almost Awake is sadder than the sea angel, and it's actually only once Elsa remembers this whole story that Granny's treasure hunt begins to make sense. Elsa's birthday was always extremely important to Granny. Maybe because Elsa's birthday is 2 days after Christmas, and Christmas is very important to everyone else, and as a result, no child with a birthday 2 days after Christmas ever gets quite the same amount of attention as a child born in August or April. So Granny had a tendency to overcompensate. Mum had banned her from planning surprise parties after that time Granny let off fireworks inside a hamburger restaurant and accidentally set fire to a 17-year-old girl who was dressed up as a clown and apparently supposed to be providing entertainment for the children. She really was entertaining, Elsa should say in her defence. That day, Elsa learned some of her very best swear words. The thing is, in Miamis, you don't get presents on your birthday. You give presents. Preferably something you have at home and are very fond of, which you then give to someone you like even more. That's why everyone in Miamis looks forward to other people's birthdays, and that's the origin of the expression, "What do you get from someone who has everything?" When the Enfants took this fairy tale into the real world, someone here managed to get the wrong end of the stick, of course, making it, "What do you give to someone who has everything?" But what else would you expect? These are the same Muppets who managed to misinterpret the word interpret, which means something completely different in Miamis. In Miamis, an interpreter is a creature most easily described as a combination between a goat and a chocolate biscuit. Interpreters are extremely gifted linguistically, as well as excellent to grill on the barbecue. At least they were until Elsa became a vegetarian, after which Granny was not allowed to mention them anymore. Anyway, so Elsa was born 2 days after Christmas, almost 8 years ago, the same day that the scientists registered the gamma radiation from that magnetar. The other thing that happened that day was a tsunami in the Indian Ocean. Elsa knows that this is a sickeningly big wave caused by an earthquake, except sort of at sea, so more like an ocean quake, really, if you want to be pernickety about it. And Elsa is quite pernickety. 200,000 people died at the same time as Elsa started to live. Sometimes when Elsa's mum thinks Elsa can't hear, she tells George she still feels guilty. It cuts her to the quick to think that this was the happiest day of her life. Elsa was 5 and about to turn 6 when she read about it online for the first time. On her 6th birthday, Granny told her the story of the sea angel, to teach her that not all monsters are monsters in the beginning, and not all monsters look like monsters. Some carry their monstrosity inside. The very last thing the shadows did before the ending of the War Without End was to destroy all of Mibatalos, the kingdom where all the warriors had been brought up. But then came Wolfheart and the Worsers, and everything turned, and when the shadows fled the land of Almost Awake, they charged out over the sea with terrible force from all the coastlines of the 6 kingdoms. And their imprint on the surface of the water stirred up hideous waves, which, one by one, smashed into each other until they had formed a single wave as high as the eternity of 10,000 fairy tales. And to stop anyone pursuing the shadows, the wave turned and threw itself back in towards land. It could have crushed the whole land of Almost Awake. It could have broken over the land and decimated the castle and the houses and all those who lived in them far more terribly than all the armies of the shadows could have managed through all eternity. That was when 100 snow angels saved the remaining 5 kingdoms. Because while everyone else was running from the wave, the snow angels rushed right into it. With their wings open and the power of all their epic stories in their hearts, they formed a magical wall against the water and stopped it coming in. Not even a wave created by shadows could get past 100 snow angels prepared to die so that a whole world of fairy tales could live. Only one of them turned back from the massive body of water. And even if Granny always said that those snow angels were arrogant sods who sniffed at wine and made a right carry-on, she never tried to take away from them the heroism they showed on that day. For the day when the War Without End came to an end was the happiest day ever for everyone in the land of Almost Awake, apart from the 100th snow angel. Since then, the angel had drifted up and down the coast,
weighed down by a curse that prevented it from leaving the place that had taken away all those it loved. It did this for so long that the people in the villages along the coast forgot who it used to be and started calling it the Sea Angel instead. And as the years went by, the angel was buried deeper and deeper in an avalanche of sorrow, until its heart split in two, and then its whole body split, like a shattered mirror. When the children from the villages sneaked down to the coast to catch a glimpse of it, one moment they might see a face of such beauty it took their breath away, but in the next they would see something so terrible and deformed and wild looking back at them that they would run screaming all the way home. Because not all monsters were monsters in the beginning. Some are monsters born of sorrow. According to one of the most often told stories in the Land of Almost Awake, it was a small child from Miamis who managed to break the curse on the Sea Angel, releasing it from the demons of memory that held it captive. When Granny told Elsa that story for the first time on her 6th birthday, Elsa realized she was no longer a child. So she gave Granny her cuddly toy lion as a present, because Elsa didn't need it anymore, she realized, and wanted it to protect her Granny instead. And that night, Granny whispered into Elsa's ear that if they were ever parted, if Granny ever got lost, she would send the lion to go and tell Elsa where she was. It had taken Elsa a few days to work it out. Only tonight, when Britt Marie mentioned that Renault had suddenly been parked in the garage without anyone knowing how it got there, did Elsa remember where Granny had put the lion on guard. The glove compartment, in Renault. That was where Granny kept her cigarettes, and nothing in Granny's life needed a lion guarding it more than that. So Elsa sits in the passenger seat in Renault and inhales deeply. As usual, Renault's doors weren't locked, because Granny never locked anything, and he still smells of smoke. Elsa knows it's bad, but because it's Granny's smoke, she takes deep breaths of it anyway. "I miss you," she whispers into the upholstery of the backrest. Then she opens the glove compartment, moves the lion aside, and takes out the letter. On it is written, "For Miami's bravest knight, to be delivered to," and then scrawled in Granny's awful handwriting, a name and an address. Later that night, Elsa sits on the top step outside Granny's flat until the ceiling lights switch themselves off, runs her finger over Granny's writing on the envelope again and again, but doesn't open it, just puts it in her backpack and stretches out on the cold floor, and mostly keeps her eyes closed. Tries one more time to get off to Miami's. She lies there for hours without succeeding. Stays there until she hears the main door at the bottom of the house opening and closing again. She lies on the floor and mostly keeps her eyes closed until she feels the night embracing the windows of the house and hears the drunk start rattling around with something a few floors further down. Elsa's mum doesn't like it when she calls the drunk the drunk.
"What do I call her then?"
Elsa used to ask, and then mum used to look very unsure and sound a bit smarmy while managing to suggest something like,
it's someone who's tired.
And then Granny used to chip in.
"Tired? Hell, yeah, of course you get tired when you're up boozing all night."
And then mum used to yell,
"Mum!"
And then Granny used to throw out her hands and ask,
"Oh, good God, what did I say wrong now, then?"
And then it was time for Elsa to put on her headphones.
"Turn off the water," I said. "No bathing at night,"
the drunk stammers from below at no one in particular, whacking her shoehorn against the banister. That's what the drunk always does, roars and screams and bashes things with that shoehorn, then sings that same old song of hers. Of course, no one ever comes out and quietens her down, not even Britt Marie, for in this house, drunks are like monsters. People think if they ignore them, they'll cease to exist. Elsa sits up into a squatting position and peers down through the gap between the stairs. She can only make out a glimpse of the drunk's socks as she shambles past, swinging the shoehorn as if scything tall grass.
Elsa can't quite explain to herself why she does it, but she heaves herself up on her tiptoes and sneaks down the first flight of stairs. Out of pure curiosity, perhaps. Or perhaps more likely, because she is bored and frustrated about no longer being able to get to Miamis. The door of the drunk's flat is open. There's a faint light cast by an overturned floor lamp. Photos on all the walls. Elsa has never seen so many photos. She thought Granny had a lot of them on her ceiling, but these must be in their thousands. Each of them is framed in a small white wooden frame, and all are of two teenage boys and a man who must be their father. In one of the photos, the man and the boys are standing on a beach with a sparkling green sea behind them. The boys are both wearing wetsuits. They smile. They are bronzed. They look happy. Under the frame is one of those cheap congratulatory cards, the kind you buy in a petrol station when you've forgotten to get a proper card. "To Mum, from your boys," it says on the front. Beside the card hangs a mirror. Shattered. The words reverberating over the landing are so sudden and so filled with fury that Elsa loses her balance and slips down the bottom four or five steps, right into the wall.
"What are you doing here?"
Elsa peers up through the railings at the deranged person wielding the shoehorn at her, looking simultaneously incandescent and terrified. Her eyes flicker. That black skirt is full of creases now. She smells of wine. Elsa can feel it all the way from the floor below. Her hair looks like a bundle of string in which two birds have got themselves tangled up during a fight. She has purple bags under her eyes. The woman sways. She probably means to yell, but it comes out as a wheeze.
"You are not allowed to bathe at night. The water, turn off the water, everyone will drown."
The white cable she always talks into sits in her ear, but the other end just dangles against her hip, disconnected. Elsa realizes there has probably never been anyone there, and that's not an easy thing for an almost 8-year-old to understand. Granny told many fairy tales about many things, but never about women in black skirts pretending to have telephone conversations while they went up the stairs, so their neighbours wouldn't think they'd bought all that wine for themselves. The woman looks confused, as if she has suddenly forgotten where she is. She disappears, and in the next moment, Elsa feels her mum gently plucking her from the stairs. Feels her warm breath against her neck and her in her ear, as if they were standing in front of a roe deer and had got a bit too close. Elsa opens her mouth, but Mum puts her finger over her lips.
"Shush,"
whispers Mum again and keeps her arms tight round her. Elsa curls up in her arms in the dark, and they see the woman in the black skirt drifting back and forth down there like a flag that's torn itself free in the wind. Plastic bags lie scattered on the floor of her flat. One of the wine boxes has toppled over. A few last drops of red are dripping onto the parquet floor. Mum makes a gentle movement against Elsa's hand. They stand up quietly and go back up the stairs. And that night Elsa's mum tells Elsa what everyone except Elsa's parents were talking about on the day Elsa was born. About a wave that broke over a beach 10,000 kilometres away and crushed everything in its path. About two boys who swam out after their father and never came back. Elsa hears how the drunk starts singing her song, because not all monsters look like monsters. There are some that carry their monstrosity inside. Chapter 14. Tires. So many hearts broke the day Elsa was born. Shattered with such force by the wave that the shards of glass were dispersed all round the world. Improbable catastrophes produce improbable things in people, improbable sorrow and improbable heroism. More death than human senses can comprehend. Two boys carrying their mother to safety and then turning back for their father, because a family does not leave anyone behind. And yet in the end, that is precisely what they did, her boys, left her alone. Elsa's granny lived in another rhythm from other people. She operated in a different way. In the real world, in relation to everything that functioned, she was chaotic. But when the real world crumbles, when everything turns into chaos, then people like Elsa's granny can sometimes be the only ones who stay functional. That was another of her superpowers. When Granny was headed for some far-off place, you could only be sure of one thing, that it was a place everyone else was trying to get away from. And if anyone asked her why she was doing it, she'd answer, "I'm a doctor, for God's sake, and ever since I became one, I've not allowed myself the luxury of choosing whose life I should be saving." She wasn't big on efficiency and economics, Granny, but everyone listened to her when there was chaos. The other doctors wouldn't be seen dead with her on a good day, but when the world collapsed into pieces, they followed her like an army. Because improbable tragedies create improbable superheroes. Once, late one night, when they were on their way to Miamis, Elsa had asked Granny about it, about how it felt to be somewhere when the world crumbles, and how it was being in the land of Almost Awake during the war without end, and what it was like when they saw that wave breaking over the 99 snow angels. And Granny had answered, "It's like the very worst thing you could dream up, worked out by the most evil thing you could imagine and multiplied by a figure you can't even imagine." Elsa had been very afraid that night, and she had asked Granny what they would do if one day their world crumbled around them. And then Granny had squeezed her forefingers hard and replied, "Then we do what everyone does. We do everything we can." Elsa had crept up into her lap and asked, "But what can we do?" And then Granny had kissed her hair and held her hard, 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 and whispered, "We pick up as many children as we can carry, and we run as fast as we can." "I'm good at running," Elsa had whispered. "Me too," Granny had whispered back. The day Elsa was born, Granny was far away, in a war. She had been there for months, but was on her way to an aircraft, on her way home. That was when she heard about the wave in another place even further away, from which everyone was in desperate flight. So she went because they needed her. She had time to help many children escape death, but not the boys of the woman with the black skirt. So she brought home the woman with the black skirt instead. "That was your grandmother's last journey," says Mum. "She came home after that." Elsa and Mum sit in Kia. It's morning and there's a traffic jam. Snowflakes as big as pillowcases are falling on the windscreen. Elsa can't remember the last time she heard Mum tell such a long story. Mum hardly ever tells stories, but this one was so long that Mum fell asleep in the middle of it last night and had to pick it up in the car on the way to school.
"Why was it her last journey?" asks Elsa.
Mum smiles with an emotional combination of melancholy and joy that only she in the entire world has fully mastered. "She got a new job." And then she looks as if she's remembering something unexpected, as if the memory just fell out of a cracked vase. "You were born prematurely. They were concerned about your heart, so we had to stay at the hospital for several weeks with you. Granny came back with her on the same day we came home." Elsa realizes that she means the woman in the black skirt. Mum clutches Kia's steering wheel hard. "I've never spoken much to her. I don't think anyone in the house wanted to ask too many questions. We let your grandmother handle it, and then..." She sighs, and regret floods her gaze. "Then the years just went by, and we were busy, and now she's just someone who lives in our house. To be quite honest with you, I'd forgotten that was how she first moved in. You two moved in on the same day." Mum turns to Elsa, tries unsuccessfully to smile. "Does it make me a terrible person that I've forgotten?" Elsa shakes her head. She was going to say something about the monster and the worse, but she doesn't because she's worried Mum won't let her see them anymore if she knows. Mums can have a lot of strange principles when it comes to social interaction between their children and monsters and worses. Elsa understands that everyone is scared of them and that it will take a long time to make them all understand that the monster and the worse, like the drunk, are not what they seem.
How often did Granny go away?
She asks instead. A silver-coloured car behind them sounds its horn when she allows a space to develop between her and the car in front. Mum releases the brake and Kia slowly rolls forward. It varied. It depended on where she was needed and for how long.
Was that what you meant that time Granny said you became an economist just to spite her?
The car behind them sounds its horn again.
What?
Elsa fiddles with the rubber seal in the door.
I heard you, like a mega long time ago, when Granny said you became an economist because you were in teenage rebellion, and you said, how do you know you were never here? That was what you meant, wasn't it?
I was angry, Elsa. Sometimes it's hard to control what you say when you're angry.
Not you. You never lose control.
Mum tries to smile again. With your grandmother, it was more difficult.
How old were you when Grandfather died?
12.
And Granny left you?
Your grandmother went where she was needed, darling.
Didn't you need her, though?
Others needed her more.
Is that why you were always arguing?
Mum sighs deeply as only a parent who has just realised that she has strayed considerably further into a story than she was intending is capable of sighing. Yes, yes, sometimes it was probably for that reason we were arguing, but sometimes it was about other things. Your grandmother and I were very different.
No, you were just different in different ways.
Maybe.
What else did you argue about?
The car behind the Kia beeps its horn again. Mum closes her eyes and holds her breath. And only when she finally releases the handbrake and lets Kia roll forward does she release the word from her lips, as if it had to force its way through. You. We always argued about you, darling.
Why?
Because when you love someone very much, it's difficult to learn to share her with someone else.
Like Jean Grey,
Elsa observes, as if it were absolutely obvious.
Who? A superhero, for X-Men. Wolverine and Cyclops both loved her, so they argued so much about her it was totally insane.
I thought those X-Men were mutants, not superheroes. Isn't that what you said last time we spoke about them?
It's complicated,
says Elsa, even though it isn't really, if one has read enough quality literature. So what kind of superpower does this Jean Grey have, then?
Telepathy.
Good superpower.
Insane,
Elsa nods in agreement. She decides not to point out that Jean Grey can also do telekinetics because she doesn't want to make things more complicated than necessary for Mum right now. She is pregnant, after all. So instead, Elsa pulls the rubber seal on the door, peers down into the gap. She is incredibly tired as an almost 8-year-old gets after staying up all night feeling angry. Elsa's mum never had a mum of her own because Granny was always somewhere else to help someone else. Elsa has never thought of Granny in that way.
Are you angry with me because Granny was so much with me and never with you?
She asks carefully. Mum shakes her head so quickly and vehemently that Elsa immediately understands whatever she's about to say will be a lie.
No, my darling, darling girl, never, never!
Elsa nods and looks down again into the gap in the door.
I'm angry with her for not telling the truth.
Everyone has secrets, darling.
Are you angry with me because Granny and I had secrets?
She thinks about the secret language, which they always spoke so Mum wouldn't understand. She thinks about the land of almost awake and wonders if Granny ever took Mum there. Never angry, whispers Mum, and reaches across the seat before she adds in a whisper, jealous. The feeling of guilt hits Elsa like cold water when you're least expecting it.
So that's what Granny meant,
she states. What did she say? Mum asks. Elsa snorts.
She said I'd hate her if I found out who she was before I was born. That's what she meant. That I'd find out that she was a crappy mum who left her own child.
Mum turns to her with eyes so shiny that Elsa can see her own reflection in them. She didn't leave me. You mustn't hate your granny, darling. And when Elsa doesn't answer, Mum puts her hand against Elsa's cheek and whispers. All daughters are angry with their mothers about something. But she was a good grandmother, Elsa. She was the most fantastic grandmother anyone could imagine. Elsa defiantly pulls at the rubber seal.
But she left you by yourself. All those times she went off, she left you on your own, didn't she?
I had your grandfather when I was small.
Yeah, until he died.
When he died, I had the neighbours.
What neighbours?
Elsa wants to know. The car behind beeps its horn. Mum makes an apologetic gesture at the back window and Kia rolls forward. Brick Marie, says Mum at last. Elsa stops fiddling with the rubber seal in the door.
What do you mean, Brick Marie?
She took care of me. Elsa's eyebrows sink into a scowling V-shape.
So why is she such a nightmare to you now, then?
Don't say that, Elsa.
But she is!
Mum sighs through her nose. Brit Marie wasn't always like that. She's just lonely.
She's got Kent.
Mum blinks so slowly that her eyes are closed. There are many ways of being alone, darling. Elsa goes back to fiddling with the rubber seal on the door.
She's still an idiot.
People can turn into idiots if they're alone for long enough, nods Mum. The car behind them beeps its horn again.
Is that why Granny isn't in any of the old photos at home?
Asks Elsa. What?
Granny isn't in any of the photos from before I was born. When I was small, I thought it was because she was a vampire, because they can't be seen in photos and they can smoke like as much as they want without getting a sore throat. But she wasn't a vampire, was she? She was just never at home.
It's complicated.
Yes, until someone explains it to you. But when I ask Granny about it, she always changes the subject. And when I ask Dad, he says, what do you want? You want an ice cream? You can have an ice cream.
Mum suddenly laughs explosively. Elsa does a mean impersonation of her dad. Your dad doesn't exactly like conflict, Mum giggles.
Was Granny a vampire or not?
Your granny travelled round the world, saving children's lives, darling. She was a... Mum looks as if she's looking for the right word, and once she does, she brightens and smiles radiantly. A superhero. Your granny was a superhero. Elsa stares down into the cavity in the door.
Superheroes don't leave their own children.
Mum is silent. All superheroes have to make sacrifices, darling. She tries at last, but both she and Elsa know she doesn't mean it. The car behind them beeps its horn again. Mum's hand shoots up apologetically towards the back window, and Kia rolls forward a few metres. Elsa realises that she's sitting there hoping Mum will start yelling, or crying, or anything. She just wants to see her feel something. Elsa can't understand how anyone can be in such a hurry to move 5 metres in a traffic jam. She looks in the back mirror at the man in the car behind them. He seems to think the traffic jam is being caused by Elsa's mum. Elsa wishes with every fibre of her being that Mum would do what she did when she was pregnant with Elsa and get out of the car and roar at the guy and tell him, enough's bloody enough. Elsa's father told that story. He almost never tells stories, but one midsummer's evening, at the time when Mum was looking sadder and sadder and going to bed earlier and earlier, and Dad sat on his own in the kitchen at night and reorganized the icons on Mum's computer screen and cried. They were at a party together, all three of them. And then Dad drank 3 beers and told a story about how Mum, while heavily pregnant with Elsa, got out of the car and went up to a man in a silver-coloured car and threatened to give birth here and now on his sodding bonnet if he beat her again. Everyone laughed a lot at that story. Not Dad, of course, because he's not a big fan of laughing. But Elsa saw that even he found it funny. He danced with Mum that midsummer. That was the last time Elsa saw them dancing together. Dad was spectacularly bad at dancing. He looked like a very large bear that had just got up and realised its foot had gone to sleep. Elsa misses it. And she misses someone who gets out and shouts at men in silver-coloured cars. The man in the silver-coloured car behind them beeps again. Elsa picks up her backpack from the floor, gets out the heaviest book she can find, throws the door open and jumps out onto the motorway. She hears Mum shouting for her to come back,
but without turning round, she runs towards the silver-coloured car and slams the book as hard as she can into its bonnet. It leaves a big dent. Elsa's hands are shaking. The man in the silver-coloured car stares at her as if he can't quite believe what just happened.
"Enough, you muppet!"
When he doesn't answer right away, she slams the book down again 3 more times and points at him menacingly.
"Do you get that my mum is pregnant?"
At first, the man looks as if he's going to open the door, but then he seems to change his mind and watches in amazement as she pummels the bonnet with her book. Elsa hears the click of the doors locking.
"One more peep, and my mum will come out and give birth to Harfy on your bloody bonnet," roars Elsa.
She stays where she is on the motorway between the silver-coloured car and Kia, hyperventilating until she gets a headache. She hears Mum yelling, and Elsa is actually on her way back into Kia. She really is. It's not as if she planned all this. But then she feels a hand on her shoulder, and a voice asking, "Do you need help?" And when she turns round, there's a policeman standing over her. "Can we help you?" he says again, in a friendly tone of voice. He looks very young, as if he's only working as a policeman as a summer job, even though it's winter.
"He keeps beeping his horn at us,"
Elsa says, defensively. The summer intern policeman looks at the man in the silver-coloured car. The man inside the car is now terrifically busy, not looking back. Elsa turns towards Kia, and she really doesn't mean to say it. It's almost as if the words accidentally fall out of her mouth.
"My mum's about to give birth and we're sort of having a hard day here."
"Your mother's in labour?" he asks, visibly tightening.
"I mean, it's not..."
Elsa begins, but of course it's too late. The policeman runs up to Kia. Mum has started getting out with great effort and is on her way towards them with her hand against Harfy.
"Are you able to drive or,
shouts the policeman so loudly that Elsa irately shoves her fingers in her ears and moves demonstratively to the other side of Kia. Mum looks slightly as if she's been caught on the back foot.
"What? Or what? Of course I can drive. Or what? Is there something..."
"I'll go on ahead,"
yells the policeman without listening to the end of the sentence, shoving Mum back into Kia and running back to his patrol car. Mum thumps back into the seat, looks at Elsa. Elsa searches the glove compartment for a reason not to have to look back at her. The patrol car thunders past with its sirens turned on. The summer intern policeman waves frantically at them to follow behind.
"I think he wants you to follow him,"
mumbles Elsa without looking up. "What's going on?" whispers Mum while Kia carefully potters along behind the patrol car.
"I guess he's escorting us to the hospital because he thinks you're about to, you know, give birth,"
mumbles Elsa into the glove compartment.
"Why did you tell him I was about to give birth?"
"I didn't, but no one ever listens to me."
"Right, and what should I do now, do you think?"
hisses Mum back, and sounds possibly a bit less self-controlled now.
"Well, we've been driving behind him for ages now, so he'll probably get quite pissed if he finds out you're not actually going to give birth for real,"
Elsa states, pedagogically.
"Oh, really? You think so?"
Mum roars in a way that is neither pedagogical nor especially self-controlled. Elsa chooses not to enter into a discussion on whether Mum is being sarcastic or ironic there. They stop outside the hospital's accident and emergency entrance, and Mum attempts to get out of the car and confess everything to the summer intern policeman. But he pushes her back into the car and yells that he's going to fetch help. Mum looks mortified. This is her hospital. She's the boss here. "This is going to be a nightmare to explain to the staff," she mumbles and rests her forehead in despair against the steering wheel.
"Maybe you could say it was some sort of exercise," Elsa suggests.
Mum doesn't answer. Elsa clears her throat again.
"Granny would have thought this was fun."
Mum smiles faintly and turns her head so her ear is on the steering wheel. They look at each other for a long time. "She would have found it bloody funny," nods Mum.
"Don't swear," says Elsa.
"You're always swearing."
"I'm not a mum."
Mum smiles again. Touché.
Elsa opens and closes the glove compartment a few times, looks up at the hospital facade. Behind one of those windows, she slept in the same bed as Granny the night Granny went off to Miami's for the last time. It feels like forever ago. Feels like forever since Elsa managed to get to Miami's on her own.
"What job was it?"
she asks, mainly so she doesn't have to think about it. "What?" Mum exclaims.
"You said that thing with the tsunami was Granny's last journey, because she had found a new job. What job was it?"
Mum's fingertips brush against Elsa's when she whispers the answer. "As a grandmother." She got a job as a grandmother. She never went away again. Elsa nods slowly. Mum caresses her arm. Elsa opens and closes the glove compartment. Then she looks up as if she's just thought of something, but mostly because she'd like to change the subject, because she doesn't want to think about how angry she is with Granny right now.
"Did you and Dad get divorced because you ran out of love?"
she asks so quickly that the question actually surprises her. Mum leans back, pulls her fingers through her hair and shakes her head. "Why are you asking?" Elsa shrugs.
"We have to talk about something while we're waiting for the policeman to come back with the people you're the boss of and everything gets mega embarrassing for you."
Mum looks unhappy again. Elsa fiddles with the rubber seal, realizes that it was obviously too early to start making jokes about it.
"Don't people get married because they're full of love and then divorced when they run out of it?"
she says in a low voice. "Did you learn that one in school?"
"It's my own theory."
Mum laughs very loudly without any early warning. Elsa grins.
"Did Grandad and Granny run low on love as well?"
she asks when Mum has finished laughing. Mum dabs her eyes. "They were never married, darling."
"Why not?"
"Your Granny was special, Elsa. She was difficult to live with."
"How do you mean?"
Mum massages her eyelids. "It's difficult to explain, but in those days it can't have been so common for women to be like her. I mean, it can't have been so common for anyone to be like her. It wasn't common for women to become doctors in those days, for example. As for surgeons, forget it. The academic world would have been quite different, so..." Mum goes quiet. Elsa raises her eyebrows as a way of telling her to get to the point. "I think if your Granny had been a man of her generation rather than a woman, she would have been called a playboy." Elsa is silent for a long while, then she nods soberly.
"Did she have many boyfriends?"
"Yes," says Mum cautiously.
"There's someone in my school who has many boyfriends," states Elsa.
"Oh, well, I wouldn't want to suggest that the girl in your school is a..." says Mum, feverishly backtracking.
"He's a boy,"
Elsa corrects. Mum looks confused. Elsa shrugs.
"It's complicated," she says,
even though it really isn't. But Mum doesn't look massively less confused. "Your granddad loved your granny very much, but they were never a couple. Do you understand?"
"I get it,"
says Elsa, because she has the internet. Then she reaches out and takes Mum's index fingers and squeezes them in her hands.
"I'm sorry that Granny was a crappy mum, Mum."
"She was a fantastic grandmother, Elsa. You were all her second chances," says Mum, and caresses Elsa's hair as she goes on. "I think your grandmother functioned so well in chaotic places because she was herself chaotic. She was always amazing in the midst of a catastrophe. It was just all this everyday life and normality that she didn't quite know how to handle. And it was just, I mean, the reason there aren't any old photos of Granny is partly because she wasn't home very often, and slightly because I tore up all the ones there were."
"Why?"
"I was a teenager and angry. The two belonged together. There was always chaos at home. Bills that didn't get paid and food that went off in the fridge when we actually had food, and sometimes no food at all. And, oh God, it's hard to explain, darling, I was just angry." Elsa crosses her arms and leans back in her seat and glares out of the window.
"People shouldn't have children if they don't want to take care of them."
Mum reaches out, touches her shoulder with her fingertips.
Your granny was old when she had me. Or what I mean is she was as old as I was when I had you. But that was old in granny's time. And she didn't think she could have children. She'd had herself tested. Elsa presses her chin down over her wishbone.
So you were a mistake?
An accident.
In that case, I'm an accident as well.
Mum's lips folded in on themselves. No one has ever wanted something as much as your father and I wanted you, darling. You're about as far from an accident as anyone can get. Elsa looks up at Kia's ceiling and blinks the haziness out of her eyes.
Is that why order is your superpower, because you don't want to be like Granny?
Mum shrugs. I taught myself to fix things on my own, that's all. Because I didn't trust your grandmother. In the end, things were even worse when she was actually here. I was angry at her when she was away, and even angrier when she was home.
I'm angry too. I'm angry because she lied about being sick, and no one told me, and now I know, and I still miss her, and that makes me angry.
Mum shuts her eyelids tight and puts her forehead against Elsa's forehead. Elsa's jaw is trembling.
I'm angry with her for dying. I'm angry with her for dying and disappearing from me, she whispers.
Me too, whispers Mum. And that is when the summer intern policeman comes charging out of the emergency doors. He has two nurses with a stretcher running behind him. Elsa turns a few centimeters.